Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Any stations with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2BAR. Nothing heard? Well, good evening, everyone. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. And this net is open to all radio amateurs, whether or not you are a member of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association or not, whether or not you have a question, whether or not you have a question that you feel is technical or not. Bring the topic up. We talk about lots of things on this net. We talk about amateur radio, electricity, electronics, computers, telecommunications, and things in our society that are driven by those things or that use those things. So we hope that you'll participate. You need not have a question in order to participate. In fact, we encourage you to check in even if you do not have a question. And you might ask, why do you do that? Well, because your presence will add texture to the way we answer a question. And you might be inspired to inquire about a topic that's up and to get a clarification, which, you know, frankly, was required by others, but they didn't realize the implications of what was being talked about as fully as maybe you did, and didn't have the same, you know, gap. And so you'll help maybe illuminate the subject a little more through your curiosity, even if you didn't start out with that curiosity. Okie doke. So the way we check into this net is also a little different than other nets. We can check in on the 146.955 repeater, this repeater, and we are set up to with a PL of 141.3, tone 141.3. And further, we are accessible via EchoLink, which is K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L. K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L, and that will bring you to the site. We will have times for check-ins from the EchoLink stations should they occur. What's nice about EchoLink is also that you can check in and text yours truly, W2TTT, with a question or a comment underneath the general conversation. Because there's a texting facility in EchoLink that we will be making use of tonight. We have a lot of interesting things to talk about tonight. One of which is the solar storm that's producing a little bit of aurora in the northern lights, and with that has also come some enhanced radio propagation, which is very, very cool as well. So in any case, we'll talk a little bit about that tonight if I can actually capture and get you to hear what that sounds like. We'll work on that through the evening. Alrighty. So with no further ado, let me do this. So I'm going to connect to the EchoLink, and then if anyone else does after that, I'll see them. And even if we're missing, we'll square that out of the way. So let's do that now. Alrighty. Very good. All right, so we're connected. And now all we need are the Kilo 2 stations. You're going to log in first tonight to the net. Any stations whose call sign begins with Kilo followed by the number 2, please call K2BAR with your name, your call sign, probably your call sign and your name, and whether or not you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
2 AMI, Tony, with just a comment. That's all for tonight, so I can think of, and it's a reference to up-and-coming meetings.
Gotcha, Tony. No problem. Good evening to you. And any other Kilo 2s?
This is K2ZO. No comments or questions.
All right. Actually, for both of you, I'm going to ask you about your interest and experience in Aurora. I'll kind of go around the room about that at some point. It just won't be you two. But since you mentioned your presence first, I thought I'd mention that. Any other Kilo 2s? Okay, any other Kilos?
KC2SQV, James. No comments or questions tonight. Thank you.
Hey, James. Good evening. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilos?
KC2Zulu Mike Alpha, Marco. No questions or comments.
Okay, Marco, very good. Good evening to you. KC2ZMA. Nice to hear you as well. That's probably this Aurora conversation will probably be something you've never heard about, which will be kind of cool for you. Any other Kilos? November station.
10-2-O-E-L. One question.
A net's never complete without at least one Noel question. Good, Noel. Nice to hear you. And we have a question for you, so when you get around to it, let us know how Elizabeth's doing. Any other Novembers? All right, Alpha Station. Let's call you to be here.
8-2-9, no questions, do net control.
Hey, Nico, how are you? Good evening. Nice of you to bring your buddy off to pick up a farewell application last week. That was kind of cool. And any other Alpha stations? Okie dokie. How about the ever popular whiskey stations?
This is W2JEK, Don with a comment.
Evening, Donald. Got you all squared away with your comment. Any other whiskey stations? All right, any other stations wishing to check in at this time? Please call KTBAR.
Connected, W2TTT.
I was wondering when that was going to come through. Alrighty, very good. I'm hearing a little bit on 6 meters, but not as much as I expected. Let's swing the beam around a little bit more towards the northwest, see if we can get a little more activity out of it. But what's really kind of cool is when we have a solar flare, and the solar flare throws its energy toward the Earth. Because remember, not every flare ends up heading toward the Earth. But when that should occur, what happens is all that energy gets concentrated at our magnetic poles by our magnetosphere. And that concentration of sun energy, if you will, to put it in layman's terms, basically ionizes the upper atmosphere. In other words, it takes the O2 molecules and breaks them apart, and now you have three oxygen atoms, both positively and negatively charged, which are running around, you know, in the upper atmosphere. These basically form like a mirror, but a special kind of mirror to reflect signals. what happens is, if you take a sheet of aluminum foil, the shiny side, and you hold it up to a flashlight, it reflects pretty well. Crunch it up to a ball, lay it back flat out, and do your absolute best to flatten it out on a table, and you'll note that it's now got facets all over it. So the light will be reflected in all sorts of directions, and it won't be very coherent in the way the reflected image comes off of the crinkled tinfoil. Then make it, put it in motion as though it was in the atmosphere. And so what happens is, instead of getting a nice, pure, coherent signal, let's say in Morse code, what you get instead is, or, and what that is the various elements of the signal getting reflected off of different parts of the atmosphere and arriving out of phase, and therefore essentially, you know, removing the tonal quality of the signal because it's all over the place. So it's classic phase distortion, but it's dynamic phase distortion because it's
repeater. Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
Yeah, I caught that. So basically, the upper atmosphere is in motion, and the phase distortion of the reflected signal just sounds like it has no tone. So you don't listen for a nice pure note when you're looking for aurora. You point your antenna, at least in this world, generally north-northwest, and you look for these signals. You can also point it northeast, but we don't have a lot of people too much to the northeast. But you can mount signals off there. Now, a single sideband is almost impossible, and because of signal-to-noise ratio issues, FM is not advised. And for the same reason that sideband doesn't work, AM doesn't work particularly well either. So your best, one of your best modes is clearly going to be CW for an auroral or AU propagation mode. With that, you can expect to communicate as far as about 1,500 miles. Any questions or experiences from auroral communications or auroral experiences in general from anybody, please call KTBR.
KTBAR, this is K2ZO.
Go ahead, Jim. Tell us about it.
Okay. This is an experience that we had one night very late. And I don't know, this is going back in the mid-70s. A particular point in time when the band was pretty dead. And a whole bunch of us were on late night 75 meters, spread from the East Coast out to the Midwest. And we're talking back and forth, and the guys were talking about, hey, go outside and take a look north. And, of course, as we did, you could see the aurora. You could see the green, the shimmering, and stuff like that. And, of course, the colors are indicative of the colors from nitrogen or oxygen, depending on what altitude the all this activity is going on. And one of the guys suggested, let me let it drop. Okay, one of the guys suggested that we all get on 10 meters and point our beams north. And we did. And we all transmitted at the aurora. And sure enough, we were able to communicate. Well, just as you said, Gordon, the audio was terrible. It was very distorted. But we knew, you know, who was there because we had just been talking to them and we knew where they were going to show up. And so we ended up making some contacts on phone, but then we went on the CW. But it was very interesting because here we were, a group of people who could have not talked more than 25 miles on 10 meters because the band was dead. And just Cinco at that time. And here we were from New York to Chicago, all communicating on 10 meters with our antennas all pointed north, bouncing the signal off the aurora and getting the signal back. It was very, very interesting.
That's very good. Who else? Was there another station?
I'm making a repeater.
W2R, go ahead, Charlie. Charlie, we didn't capture that at all. I'll make a transmission here while you try to figure out how to make your signal better. I'm hearing something about 50.112, and it's intermittent, and it's got some tonal quality to it. So it's unclear to me whether I'm hearing somebody else off the back of the beam or whatever, or am I actually getting some aurora, but I can hear it. I'd probably be better off if I had some digital signal processed receiver software running. But right now I don't. But I actually hear it in my ears. Kind of cool. I guess you might hear some stuff on the low end of 10 meters, as Jim said as well. That's pretty cool. I'll turn it back to WE2R. Let's see if you have any more.
K2ECN.
Andy, go right ahead.
Trying to make it before, I guess the HT wouldn't quite enough. I wanted to add to that story of Jim's. There's quite a bit more to it. If you had stuck around a little longer, Jim, and tried other bands, you would have found things that were quite fascinating. I was on with Nat, W2PN, Jimmy, K2PXX, I think Boris was on there, too. And well, maybe a couple more people, but that was the... Anyway, we were on 15 at the time, and the band was apparently dead. We heard a guy break in from South Africa. It didn't sound like the band was open at all, but he was there, and he joined us. I aimed my antenna at him, because I'm aware I had it. It was in Africa. And I lost him completely when I aimed my antenna where he should have been. But somebody else got him. When I moved my antenna, the other patient lost him. May I drop? Drop. Okay. A fellow from South America joined us. We had about three or four QSOs going, and none of them behaving the way you would expect. And when one person moved his antenna, it affected the reception of other people, which I'd never witnessed before. So just for the heck of it, I just sent a dot on CW. I got about seven dots back. And we gathered that what we were experiencing was exactly once around the world skip. And we counted seven as the most. Other times it was just three or four. But just sending a single dot and you get those back. It was really fascinating. And this is about the same time you're talking, Jim. I think it probably was the same night.
KTBAR, the group K2ZO. Very interesting. Yeah, there were other folks I remember who made comments about it. But, yeah, we were just on 10 because we knew that band was dead. And we're just popping them, you know, signals north and then listening, and a whole group of us. But it was quite interesting. And we had another very interesting incident, and that was with long-delayed echoes. But we could save that topic for another night, Gordon. But that's fascinating. Back to that, K2ZO.
Yep. Very good. There seems to be some CW around 50.112. I don't have a decent 10-meter antenna, so I really couldn't tell you about 10. But I can say right now there's definitely something intermittently about 50.112.2, let's say. In any case, pretty cool. These propagation modes are really neat. Let me also elaborate a little bit about some other things that happened today. People were noticing that 2-meter propagation was like all over the place, hearing stations hundreds and hundreds of miles away on 2 meters, even on FM, and even on direct. And that was because if you roll the weather maps back about maybe 6 to 8 hours from this time, you'll see that there was a front that's set up up and down the coast where warm air was coming in from the south, was meeting cold air in the north, and it created a thermal inversion layer. And as a consequence of that, there was a lot of north-south propagation up and down the coast and inland as well, at least as far as the Ohio Valley and down into, let's say, Alabama, that area of the world, so as well as the coast. So at various times it was happening today. Very, very fascinating to watch. So, you know, these transitional days, especially a change of season, are always exciting. I've actually had ESCIP extended by tropospheric ducting. Troposphere meaning where the weather is, as it were, and what do you call it? The ESCIP to extend it further. That's happened to me on 2 meters. It's happened to me on 6 meters. And it's really, really kind of neat. It really, really is. Watching the weather maps and watching the propagation reports to kind of see what can work for you, and being persistent, calling CQ a lot. If you just sit there and listen, you're not going to work anybody. We got to make some noise. So that's very cool as well. Anybody else? Okay, anybody have any more? Alrighty. Well, yeah. So, you know, get your antennas all squared away, and as soon as the weather gets a little less nasty, and rock and roll, have some fun. Very, very cool. Alrighty. I suspect that the evening wears on, you know, more toward midnight. I've been told the aurora should kick up even more, but we'll see. So, before we go on to our next topics and questions, does anybody else want to check into that? This is K2BAR.
This is KO2OK. Bennett, no questions at this time.
Hi, Bennett. Good for you. Welcome aboard. And speaking of the guys who should get on the air when they get home, you would be the guy, because I think we're going to have some good stuff for you to work. Absolutely. I'm definitely hearing somebody at 50.112. Alrighty. Anybody else want to check in? All right, James, no problem. I'll add you to the list. Not a problem. Alright, let's do this. Tony, K2AMI, you had a comment. I'm going to wrap up yours and Don's comments and go to Noel's question and James's comment, unless we have other stuff, we'll add that to the back of after James. So, Tony versus K2AMI, K2BAR.
I think this is K2AMI for the Barotechnet, but this is not a technical item. But I just want to point out that this coming Sunday night, there is a Bergen Amateur Radio FM Association repeater, that's the Paramus repeater, meeting. And it'll be at the Red Cross building, where we used to hold the Barra meetings, the Red Cross building at about 7 o'clock. Actually, the meeting should start around 7:30. The doors should be open around 7.
Dues Are Due is a good place to pay your dues. So if you can get to the Bergen County FM Association, BCFMA, Bergen County FM Association meeting on Sunday night, definitely by 7:30, we would welcome all who show up. And that's my only comment. Back to that.
Alrighty. That's great. That's great. What time is that at the Red Cross?
It's supposed to start at 7:30, but the building should be open at 7. You can come up and have an eyeball with your friends, maybe have some coffee and some donuts or cake or something. But the meeting starts at 7:30.
Most excellent. Thank you, Tony. And Don, W2JEK, your comment.
KQBAR and the net W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. Just to remind everybody, we're having a test session tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Westwood Regional High School in Washington Township. So, and I'll be having some people are coming. One fellow is supposed to be coming from Pennsylvania, so we'll see what happens. At least I don't have to sweat out a snowstorm this time like we did last time. So I'll be at the end. Thank you, and back to net, W2JK.
Okay, any questions for Don? Okey-doke. Very fine. Alrighty, our next common question confusion comes from and Joel, your question, Noel. Good evening.
Well, I got another question while I'm waiting. So I have two questions. The question I just thought of while I was waiting is a computer question. I had backed up with Seagate backup utility that came with my Seagate outboard drive. And it turns out that I can't restore unless I happen to have a Seagate drive in my computer, so that ain't going to work. Does anybody have any recommendations for a freeware backup utility? Nothing fancy. I just want to back up the whole computer, and if someday in the future I lose everything to the hardware, cache, virus, whatever it may be, I just want to restore the whole computer. I don't want to look at things. I don't want to be able to open it. I don't want to do nothing except a complete backup or a complete restore, nothing fancy, and I prefer it to be free. That's it. That's William.
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. Anybody have any suggestions for Noel? Alright. No one has any favorite backup utilities that they use that might be freeware or shareware? All right. I'm sorry, Noel. I've been using Apricorn, the toy here. That what I do basically is you take a raw drive and you plug it into your Apricorn device, which is a little gizmo that talks to a number of different types of disk drives. Has a USB port on it. And it comes with some software. These utilities and the devices cost about 10 or 15 bucks at Micro Center. We're not talking about a big deal. The latest one I show is DriveWire, but Apricorn makes a number of products that, for different kinds of drives. I even think they make one for SATA drives. So any number of things might work for you there, okay? I'm Joey L. Can you be there?
Yes, Peter introduced me to it, but I just wanted to work something that would work with my outboard drive in case I had a catastrophic failure.
In all honesty, I don't know. I truly don't. That's going to be a bit of a mystery to me. I guess no one else has any thoughts on this.
KC2ZMA, I have a suggestion.
Oh, Marco, go ahead.
K2BAR, this is KC2ZMA. Noel, the best thing, if you want to actually back up the computer, the best thing to do is just get an external hard drive, like a USB external hard drive or USB, and just back up all your pictures, videos, anything important, like programs or anything like that. And if the computer fails, you could just restore the whole thing and just dump everything back in the computer. I've done that with all my computers. I've got backed up on hard drives to hard drives and just back everything up. Instead of just relying on only one machine to have everything on there, even burning files and all a bunch of things to CDs and DVDs, that would be the best thing I suggest for anybody to back up stuff with computers. That's actually the best and the safest thing to do it that way. And you just put your recovery disks right into the computer, or just reinstall Windows all together with that. This is a KC2ZMA Ethernet control.
And William? I have a 1.5 terabyte external drive. What I do is, it came with the software to do automatic backups of your data. So I back up my documents, my wife's documents. That's automatically done. In fact, it's done every day. As long as I plug that thing in, it's done automatically. What I want to do is save the whole operating system, everything. Because if you've installed Windows, sometimes it's a two-hour ordeal when you push the buttons and stuff. Then, by the time you put in all your favorite programs and software, it can be 6 or 8 hours. I would like to do everything and do this thing, approximately once a month, back up the whole computer with 1.5 terabytes. I can back up lots of stuff. I'd like to back up the whole computer as an image. If anything ever happened, I would restore the image, I'd back to wherever I did the restore, and at that point, I would go onto this same hard drive and take off any documents that I needed that was more up to date. So that was my theory, but I'd like to not have to restore or reinstall Windows. That is not fun. And back to this. That's William.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I understand what you want to do. You really want to have a complete disk image of your stuff. And believe me, I sympathize with that. And I have a couple of drives around here that are raw drives that I did that exact thing with. Personally, I think using the 1T drive as a media backup, because if it's innate convenience, it's better. Medias and files and things like that. And if you have a utility that'll do an image backup, great. But frankly, I think you might be better off with an Apricorn, drive wire or something like that for that purpose, and actually have a physically replacement drive, even if it's larger, but as long as the same physical dimensions and electrical interface. You can just drop it in, and it's wonderful. So if you have, let's say, an 80 meg drive or 80 gig drive somewhere, you want to replace it with a 320 next time you fry something, well, no problem. You back up your image on the 320, and the first 80 gig will be in use, and then the rest will be for that next step up. That's how I've migrated all my drives. I always get the same or the next size bigger. And so my next disk disaster just gets me a larger piece of media. By the way, along that same line, I have a iOmega drive. It's a 1T drive. It's actually two FT 500 gig drives internally. And for whatever reason, I can't get the USB to come up anymore. It used to. I thought there might be a power supply problem, but it doesn't seem to be. The voltage just check out, so I'm just a little perplexed about that. I don't know if anyone has seen those drives, but they're kind of a dual height. They kind of look like the size of a narrow 5 1/4 inch disk drive, high height. Anyway, back to you, Noel.
Okay. Are you ready for the next question?
Yes, sir.
Ham radio-wise, if you happen to be using an ALS 600 solid-state amplifier, one of the things I thought was great was the no-tune feature. Then I found out that it's only no-tune if your antenna happens to be resonant with no greater than a 2-to-1 SWR. So that means either I have to use one of the big tuners or get resonant antennas. What would happen if I was just going to use it, you know, say 200 watts instead of the full output? Would I still have to keep it within the 2-to-1 range?
And the full output is normally what, a kilowatt?
600 watts.
Yeah, probably be all right. But why would you do that to your amplifier? You probably get away with it, but to what end?
Well, no, I just am lazy. My SC-1000 is much more forgiving with that, 502. Was it 500? Anyways, it's much more forgiving.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it. You absolutely could do it. If you ran it at 200 watts, but is it really worth the 3 dB to go through a lot of arm waving?
I generally like to run my amps at about, my transceivers 30 or 40 watts, not at the full 100.
And I guess it's a reasonable thing. I don't know. Has anyone ever done something like that? You know, just to, shall we say, compromise? I mean, I think if I was going to do that, I'd say, screw it, run the radio at 100 watts and drop the amplifier, but that's just me. But I'm sure someone else has a different opinion. Anybody want to comment?
KO2, okay.
Go ahead, Ben.
Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way, and I may have missed part of it because the last 5 minutes I was just getting in the car to go get gas and go to the bank and stuff, so I'm mobile. Even if you think you're running 100 watts, unless you're running in a digital mode at 100 watts, maybe you're only at 65% or 50%, even though you think you have full power out, you're running 100 watts on a single sideband. What is your real duty cycle?
My thoughts are, if you're running a 600-watt amp at 200 watts, you pretty much don't care.
K2ZO.
Jim?
Okay, I think you got to think about it a little differently. The amplifier that you have, Noel, is got a fixed tuned output set at 50 ohms. Okay? The filters that are in there are designed to work at 50 ohms. The way the amp is made, a solid state amp, is you are pushing RF into it, and then when you change bands, the only thing you change is the output filters. You're switching in a different output filter. And that output filter is a band pass filter or a low pass filter so that you don't generate garbage. The minute you run that amplifier at a different impedance, the filters aren't working. So you can generate all kinds of garbage. That's one thing you've got to understand about a solid-state piece of equipment like that. It wants to be fed with 50-ohm, feet of 50-ohm antenna, because that's the way the thing is made. Now, your AL-88 has a Pi network, which is very much like an antenna tuner. You can tune it into anything as long as the voltage is not over too high on the output loading capacitor. Okay, that's the only thing that's going to limit that. You can load a Pi network into anything just as long as you've got the components that are rated high enough. Not so with a solid-state amp. Back to that.
Yeah, that's well put. Good old Pi network can handle the voltage and the current in such a way as to not immolate themselves. Anybody else? Okay. Very, very good. Well, just turned out AMA here. For those of you who know WATPI, just chatting away on the star in the background. Alrighty. Any more on this topic from anybody? Mr. Noel, it's yours.
No, nothing more. Just asking a couple of questions about it. Guess I gotta get myself a kilowatt automatic antenna tuner. Looks like it's working part-time job, maybe. Back to that. This is at 2 OEM.
Is that on top of your regular job?
Yeah, sure. I got every morning free. Maybe I could work at Burger King.
You have to be on your feet too much. I don't think you'd like that. I wouldn't like that. But for an amplifier, maybe some extra Christmas presents, what the hell. Alrighty. Very good. Let's see. Interesting, I'm no longer hearing CW around on 6 meters. I did tune around a bit while we were chatting. And lack that. So, oh well. Alrighty. Anybody else with any other topics, check-ins, etc.?
KC2ZMA, what a question.
Go right ahead, then I want to get to James' comment, too.
K2BAR, this is KC2ZMA. Gordon and Jimmy, you guys mentioned about the Aurora Soliflex. I think I'm saying it right. I'm actually looking it up now on the computer. And you mentioned that when the signals bounce, even though they get to the destination, that the sound distorted, or even on CW, you can't hear it that well, it's off. What actually causes that? Back control.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward. So, if you can imagine what happens when waves starting off at a common point go off into space, bounce off of different things, and then arrive at a common remote point out of phase from each other, they're going to both add and subtract from each other depending on the difference in, if you will, arrival time, which will be a function of the different path lengths of the different waves as they bounce off of different things between the two points.
Okay, I got this so far.
Okay, so when that happens, you get more signal or less signal, and you get it in a irregular manner, and it produces buzzing or almost a whispery sound, because it's all over the place as far as the additive and subtractive nature of the arriving signal at the receiver. So that's what causes that.
Okay, just like the demonstration you told me about the aluminum foil. where the light reflects in the, and the light is reflecting everywhere. Okay, I got that now. Thanks, Gordon. This is KC2ZMA. Back to Net Control.
And keep in mind that instead of being planar in nature, it, you know, like a piece of aluminum, it's got depth. So different parts of that energized cloud are reflecting differently at different times and in different locations. So, you know, you have a vector that's operating in a couple of different dimensions, elevation, azimuth, as well as just pure distance from the transmitter and or the from their point of reflection to the receiver. They're all different, creating different path lengths, and hence the distortion. Anyway, that's as simple a way I can tell you. I'm trying to avoid the use of the word phase angles and stuff like that. I'm just trying to avoid that, but it's all based on that. You know, you can do the mathematics if you want, but I don't think that's necessary. I think a more physical model is probably appropriate to understanding.
I got the basic idea of it. Thanks, Gordon.
Anybody want to add in?
KO2, okay, maybe a little more relevant this time.
Go ahead.
You should go to YouTube or something and put in a search for Aurora ham radio or something like that. It's a very unique sounding, but common sounding reception that you hear. Back to net, KO2, okay.
No, Ben, that's a great idea. That's just a super idea. Just enter amateur radio and Aurora, or ham radio and Aurora, and you'll actually get to hear it. And you might even get some video to go with it. You actually see the images. One key point about Aurora, you need not be able to see it in order to have it work for you from a radio propagation mode viewpoint. So that's something else to consider as well. You do not need to see it. It doesn't have to be good enough to see anywhere in order to be effective as a communications mechanism. So do keep that in mind. Okie dokie. James, I was delightful. KC2FQV. Who's busily studying for his general these days, KTBAR. Your comments, sir.
K2BAR, KTSQV. Thank you very much. Good evening to all. I'm just doing a search right now for the, hopefully y'all can share something for the suggestion. Bennett. The only comment I had wasn't anything really ham radio related other than thank you everyone last week when I did the net control for your patients. I basically, as you know, if you were tuning in last week, I was within the width with about a minute's notice, if even that much, and ended up having a rather decent net and discussion. And if you're particularly if you're a rather relatively new amateur radio operator like I am, about 3 years now, but getting to operate more and delve into it more as of late, you have the opportunity to be a net control. You should definitely grab the opportunity at a decent time and take an opportunity. Hopefully more will come your way, you know, if you do a decent job, so I'm basically not ever going to do it again. Put that in mind back to net, KC2SQV.
Of course you'll do it again. That's awesome. Yeah, let me point out here, and James, I want to thank you on the net here tonight for jumping in last week. You really were thrust into the middle of it all. What this was about was I was on the phone for a half hour trying to sort out a problem with a piece of vendor software that I had, and the call was just not getting done. It ultimately did get done, and it was satisfactory, but it was not getting done. And 15 seconds after 9 o'clock, James looks at me and goes, "You going to run the net?" And I was looking at the clock and debating as to whether I could put the phone down and run across the room and start the net or do something or beg someone to take it. And instead, I looked up, saw him standing next to the radio, and said, "You do it." That's all I said. He looked at me like, "Really?" I said, "You can do it. You know how." He goes, "Okie dokie." So in about 15 more seconds, he grabbed a pen or a pencil and started in. And I think he did a good job. And James, thank you again for a job well done.
Thank you very much. And on the note with this Aurora phenomenon, you type Aurora Ham Radio. It's about the second or third one over on YouTube. May even be listening to it in the background, so I'll just do the best I can to mute it. My computer's a little slow. It's CQ Aurora, and forget the gentlemen or ladies, even. It's about a four-minute video. You'll see it's about a four-minute, four-second video, and it's about halfway through, and it's absolutely phenomenal. You get a decent gist of what a good portion of the conversation's been about this evening. Get a QSO, a single sideband, and CW as well. So you'll see the 4 minute, 4 second video, and it looks quite fascinating, actually. And someone who's never really experienced it before is really great. Okay, back to that KC2SQD.
Okay, James, that's great. Yeah, I can hear it in the background. And yeah, that pretty much sounds like it's nasty sounding. Probably one of the most hideous sounds in radio propagation. It really is. Any other comments or questions for that at this time? Okay,
that's stupid.
Find everybody that as the weeks go by, you know, don't get slack about your emergency preparedness. Make sure you know where your stuff is. Make sure you have your go kit ready. Batteries are all squared away. And, you know, you've got some, you know, go food and drink to go with you. Should you have to go deploy somewhere. And, you know, make it some ice storms, stuff like that. Last February and March were pretty cool around here. And, so what I'd like to suggest is that for next week, people consider giving a look at the new QST that just came out this week, the March QST. It's the antenna issue, and we don't have to talk about just the antennas that they talk about in here, but anything you want, let's talk about antennas next week. And the kid on page 44 is not Jeremy. Oh, my. Anyway, so that's pretty much what I have for tonight. Anybody else?
NS2K.
There were two stations. NS2K, I got you, Jim. And who else?
Tony, K2AMI.
Okay, Mr. Tony.
It's a quick one before you go to Jim. That is, in the same QST that you've got in your hands, you didn't mention that Barra is listed in the VHF contest results for last September. And in the limited multi-classification that Barra usually participates in, that's four stations with high power, we placed seventh in the country. We also placed very high in the Hudson Division, or the Northeast section. So you might also read about the VHF contest. Back to net.
I'm sorry, Tony, I had only gotten as far as the cover. So, let's see. And I just happened to scroll it open, and I just saw that one kid who was kind of a little older than Jeremy, but just about as blonde. So, let's see. The high power is probably limited. You said there were seventh in the country. What do you call it? Limited multi-operator. KTBAR at 57,672 points. Very, very slick. Is that one of the first top 10 finishes we've had in a number of years?
A few years. I really don't keep a running toll of the top 10s, but if you look at that, that was not a very high-intensity contest. Look at the other scores, and you'll see that nobody was overwhelmed with band openings. And I was disappointed to see that we actually made more contacts in our position, but unfortunately less grids than the sixth-place winner. So we almost made six. somebody ought to come up with a spreadsheet of all the contacts, all the club results we've had, but I don't have the information. I'm back to that.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. Wow. In fact, I see here a picture of the event to CEI and his wife, Sandra, who's Sandy. They call Sandra in the article, Sandy. K2ZM. Yeah. That's a fun group, by the way. I've been invited to operate with them on several occasions. Steve looks comatose. But anyway, I think it's really kind of cool. But AA4, was it NZ or something? You know, he's got the advantage of having a few more grids to reach for. You know, we're right up against the ocean here, so we lose quite a bit of, quite a bit on that. But it's still. He came in third in the, I guess, in the southeast. I don't know where he is. I'd have to look him up, but I don't think he's as close to the coast as we are. If I recall correctly. So that's something to consider as well. Sometimes it's a little bit better to be a little further west, but then you lose certain propagation capabilities too. So there's a trade-off. There is a trade-off.
E2YSB timeout.
Yeah, if you look, his breakdown, he had 29 grids on 6, 53 on 2, 21 and 29 on 222 and 432 respectively. So, you know, about the grids, baby. He whooped you, but good, by 5 grids on 220 and 12 on 432, 1 on 6, and just a whole lot, 53 versus 28 on 2 meters. It was really about the grids. So there's your lesson plan. Spend more time mining grids.
USL.
Yep. Okay. Are there any other... Are there any other comments for tonight?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Jim. You came in. I thought Tony wanted to say something and leave, and it ended up being a little long. NS2K, good evening, and I'll add you to the log. How are you, and what is your comment, sir?
Well, I'll start off with a question. Did anyone talk about the meeting that we're having on Sunday?
Yes, the BCFA meeting at 7:30 at the Red Cross in Ridgewood.
Excellent. That means I don't need to make a comment.
Okay, we talked about aurora both tonight and in the 70s. Some other odd propagation modes, like long delayed echoes and long paths and some other things. By the way, in the article that Tony referred to for the contest results, Sandy has her dog sitting on her lap. And I forget this dog's name, but this is not the dog they had when they lived up here. Their dog has been maybe it's the same one. But this dog is a funny dog. They have had a series of dogs, and they're all adorable. And they're really, really funny. So, anyway. I miss Sandy and Steve when they were in Frenchtown. It was a lot of fun to be able to run down there a few times a year. The admission ticket, when they had their shop in the basement of their house, the admission ticket was a case of Diet Coke, preferably iced, but if you didn't have it iced, it was a problem, because when you opened the refrigerator they had in the basement, they already had two that were already iced. They ran on Diet Coke. They still do, by the way. I think Downey's microwave products are among the finest you can get. And if you think there's something better, you can always tweak your own using that platform as a start, and you'd be pretty hard pressed to be as cost effective and as high performing. This is K2BAR. Alrighty. Well, so your homework for next week is to open up the March QFT, look at the antenna, and get excited about the antennas they talk about, but some antennas, any antenna, whatever you want to do, it's an antenna stuff. We're going to have antenna time in addition to everything else. And, of course, if you see something else in the journal that gets your attention, we can talk about that as well. So it's just a VHF contest. And maybe people have some contacts to report after this. So, one last time, anybody have a new topic they want to bring up? All right, well, I'd like to thank everybody for their time and attention this evening. It's been fun, and you have a great time. And I think James is on the phone with Noel over the disc issue. That's what it sounds like across the room, in another room. Anyway, I have to have that boy build some antennas for himself, put them on the roof. God, another antenna farm in the Beatty house. There's already two. Maybe we'll have a third. We'll have James' antenna farm. Anyway, this is K2BAR thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. And also thanking everybody for their participation. I'll see some of you on Sunday night at the BCFMA meeting at the Red Cross at 7:30, the annual meeting. And we'll wish everybody a fine good evening. This is K2BAR.